The following episode of the Cantori Show is brought to you, by Baja Bound. Baja Bound Mexican Auto Insurance, the easiest way to buy Mexican auto insurance. Been around for over 25 years. You can get a policy in minutes from their easy-to-use website, and you can insure all your belongings, not just the automobile. You can even get that $2,500 electric bike insured, Chris Cote. It's BajaBound.com. They're the best. Yes, yes, it's so great. Great to be back with you here. I've missed you, as always. We've got a great show for you today. I do want to thank Jake Nager and the Moment of Truth for supplying our background music, all our theme music. Jake Nager, not only a friend, a prolific musician. And it was about, let's see, late 90s, so 90s, over 20 years ago, almost 25 years ago. I remember having a profound anxiety attack before interviewing the band Stone Temple Pilots over at 91X. I was new to the gig. It was my first big interview. The band was coming through to promote their new record at the time, Four. And I was shitting bricks, as they say. I was so nervous. I didn't want to blow it. You know, I had the whole station there, and they were going to do the interview with me and the performance, and I was in over my head, just to be straight. And I knew it. And I was never one of those fake it till you make it types. So knowing that I was in over my head got in my head. And about a half hour before the band showed up, I found myself in the 91X bathroom, essentially hyperventilating in a stall. Remember that scene in Trading Places when Eddie Murphy is standing? He's on top of the toilet smoking a joint. That was me without the joint. Just losing my mind. And I even at the time, I think I called my mom to help talk me off the ledge, because here I am at work having an anxiety attack, and in other environments, like, you know, social situations, I can just start slamming beers, but you can't do that 9 a.m. Well, some people do, but I couldn't do that 9 a.m. in the morning, you know, hosting a show. So I had to power through the attack and or what was going on this episode, not really knowing what was really happening. You know, I say now I talk about it like I'm fully aware, you know, what was happening. But in the middle of it back then, I still wasn't sure, if that makes sense. But I got through it, got through the interview performance. It was fine, you know, nothing great. But I don't even remember any song. I remember they played Sour Girl. That's about it. Other than that, I don't remember the interview, the performance. All I remember is having this anxiety attack before they showed up. And thinking at the time, I wish I had the tools, or maybe the medicine, to help me get through situations like this. But I didn't. It was a different time. And thankfully, you know, today we're really working on breaking the stigma surrounding mental health, which is why when I got this email from our guest today, Brett Newsky, I was like, all in, because Brett has a new book that is completely devoted to breaking the stigma of mental illness, entitled It's Hard to Be a Person, Defeating Anxiety, Surviving the World, and Having More Fun. And for those who deal with anxiety or other mental illness issues, that's certainly the truth. And this book has been endorsed by the Lumineers. They say, I love how easy it is for Brett to plow through the dark stuff with some well-placed humor and grit. I love the fact it's an illustrated book. I don't know if I mentioned that. Before we get to Brett here, and keep in mind, he's an accomplished singer-songwriter. He's toured with the Pixies, Violent Femmes, Courtney Barnett, some serious heavy hitters, and the fact that he's using his network to help break down the stigma of mental illness, I think it's just the best, and I commend him.
Thanks, man. It's hard to be a person.
It is hard to be a person, especially when you have anxiety, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I mean, I gotta believe everyone has anxiety. Maybe not. I think it's gotta be a part of being a person. It's like in our DNA for like the whole fight or flight thing, you know? Because if we didn't have that, we would just probably get eaten by bears because we wouldn't have any anxiety about a bear coming to snarf us for lunch. So I don't know. I think there's something to that. Yeah.
No, I do agree with you. I do think that everybody to some extent deals with it, but some have to deal with more profound anxiety than others. And I would imagine you fit into that category based on your book.
I would say so. I mean, I'm a pretty like highly sensitive person. So I don't know. You know how it is. You probably just feel all the vibrations a lot. And, you know, that has its pros and cons. You know how it probably helps you a lot creatively with the podcast and creating and writing and coming up with, you know, talking points or essays and that kind of stuff or songwriting or whatever. But yeah, on the other side, you know, you do feel more profound lows, which, you know, they can really kick your ass. But all the lows, you know, I think they're there for a reason. And, you know, some people would call it like trauma or just, you know, anxiety or depression. But those lows give you a barometer for what your happy days or appreciating your happy days and even appreciating like the equilibrium. So, yeah, I think there's something to that.
And when did you first notice, like, do you have profound memories of just noticing that anxiety was in your DNA and something that you were dealing with? Does it date back to childhood?
Big time. Yeah. I think like, yeah, just having really circular thinking or like laying in bed in fifth grade and then like running downstairs to check my backpack to make sure I put like a homework assignment in there. Like I was just like, yeah, a little splash of paranoia and just like terrified to talk to girls or terrified like the teacher hated me or like, you know, whatever it was. So there was always that, but I just never knew what it was or anything. And I think you kind of, you figure it out more in adult life and you realize there's like names for these things and that's good. It's good to get diagnosed because then you can start kind of chipping away at it and working on it and just realizing it's like pretty normal. So it's nothing to feel guilty or weird about, but it does suck. You know, I sympathize with anyone who gets those rushes of like existential dread or worries, you know, that I get them pretty much daily.
We should be bowling partners. Do you if you live locally, we could bowl or surf together because I know that dread you speak of. And did it have, I'm curious, when you were a kid, did it also show itself and rear itself physically, like in physical ways, like stomach issues, headaches, stuff like that, that you couldn't explain?
Yeah. The brain really can trigger some physical ailments. And that has been, that's been a constant theme in my life, you know, just like, yeah, really fixating on there's something wrong with my right ear and then you can't hear as well, or there's something wrong with my voice and it becomes scratchy and tougher to talk and your muscles all tighten up. So yeah, the brain is a powerful thing, and I'm a hypochondriac, so I'm always like obsessing about stuff like, oh my God, I have a rash on my ass. No girl will ever see me naked again. It's over. My life is over.
Yeah.
And so yeah, but it's tricky to pull yourself out of those when you're in those toilet bowls, because they are they do cloud your judgment and your thinking. So
1,000%. I mean, just 2 days ago, I had a sore throat, and if we were talking, I would have told you that I got the Delta variant of COVID.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, COVID was a son of a bitch, wasn't it? Initially.
Yeah, the COVIDius. I mean, I think, yeah, for hypochondriacs, that could really trigger you into a spiral. I feel you. I totally relate to that. But I have trouble reminding myself, like when I'm in the toilet bowl, is like reminding myself like I'm not thinking clearly or not thinking rationally, because like at the deep down, everything is fine. You know, everything's going great.
Exactly.
Yet, I feel glimpses of the end of the world for 9 to 9 seconds at a time, or an hour or two at a time. And yeah, you know how it goes.
And do you have tools or techniques that you practice to help pull you out of those moments when you're in that storm?
That's a good question. I mean, as far as just like real quick things, I think like the stretching is big because stretching kind of sucks, you know, it hurts and you get that ache, but it that means it's working, you know, and especially like neck stretches. I like sitting on the floor stretching my legs out and a little pain for pleasure because I always my brain always feels more relaxed after that. And like meditation is not something I feel qualified to talk about because I suck at it, you know, but
I feel you.
That's an accumulative thing where even if you make an effort at it 10 minutes in the morning or set aside that that really does build. And then it kind of, you get more skilled at it and it gives you kind of a place to go when you're like feeling a little panicky or anxious. You're like, oh, I can go sit in a chair and try to zone out for even 5 or 10 minutes while I'm sitting in my car before a meeting or whatever. So yeah, the trick is just reminding to do shit, you know, while you're feeling bad, like reminding to stay on the offense rather than just like curling up and desperately trying to play defense on, you know, some massive LeBron James anxiety attack.
Right. Yeah. I've tried the, I don't know if you've checked it out, but there's that Headspace app that is pretty awesome too, where I'll do like little body scans to help break me from, get me out of that moment.
Ooh, the body scan. That's a good point. Yeah. Cause you can like, people tell me to like breathe into the spot on my body that's causing me ailment or whatever. And that, that's something I always forget to do, but it is a good method, you know?
And I'm curious when it comes to your professional career, did you often, or was there a point where you asked yourself, you know, of all the careers that I could pick, being a songwriter where the pressure's on and a touring musician where you're literally on stage and all eyes are on you, for a person with anxiety, that doesn't seem to be the profession of choice. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I guess I thought I was an extrovert through my whole 20s, like playing in rock bands and playing music. But that I think that was just a farce because I thought that because I was just probably drinking beer the whole time. So I was like, oh, I'm not anxious.
Yeah.
I have the demon liquor in my system. But yeah, man. I mean, I do have massive anticipation anxiety around shows and, you know, some nights I'm just so on and I just feel so confident and other nights like to be like the person in a room is just such enormous pressure. And like, I can't explain how bad that feels and uncomfortable that feels like leading up to it because I'm just like constantly worried I'm going to let people down or like not put on a good show or not be very good at socializing after the gig. So I guess that's just a tax of doing the thing. And it's a real honor to be able to do it at all. So I'm totally willing to pay that tax. And when I'm feeling good and feeling on and the band is hitting and I'm feeling on, I mean, there's no better feeling that it's true glory, you know?
Absolutely. But I also know that, that anticipation and the anxiety that goes along with that, and not wanting to let other people down and carrying that into the moment, which in turn makes it hard to be present. And also, when you speak of the 20s, I think for a lot of us that have dealt with this during our 20s, we really did use alcohol as a coping mechanism to help us get through this period and give us this false sense of, hey, we're cool, man. We can hang. We could walk into these situations with confidence. I'm not sweating. Right. I'm not tripping in my head. I got a buzz and I'm ready to roll. Yep. But then that stops working after a while.
For sure does. I mean, I think any full-time touring musician, you generally either quit drinking. I feel like most of the lifers end up quit drinking or it's like, or it's very, very minimal. So the anticipation, anxiety, how do you kind of get around that? Because you know how it is, you have something on your calendar and you're like, even if it's something you're pumped about, you're like, you still obsess about it all day, you know?
Yeah, I still struggle because I've been putting on shows down here in San Diego leading up to it. My wife will notice that I get really super stressed out and I'm not present. And I'm really just freaked and riddled with that dread you speak of that's really not founded in anything. You know, the show's sold out.
Right.
Everyone's pumped. The artists are pumped. The crowd's pumped. Yeah. I just look like a ball of stress.
Yeah, totally, man. Sometimes, you know, you find that groove where it's all so much fun. And I struggle to find that. It's like, man, how can it be? It should be fun, right? I mean, yeah, there's pressure. You know, you're in the same business as I am. You know, you got to sell tickets and that's a lot of pressure. But when you're doing the thing, I guess what I'm saying is I just want to have more fun on tour. But yeah, I've been struggling with that, getting out of my own brain, you know?
Well, which takes us to the title of your book. Well, the full title, It's Hard to Be a Person, Defeating Anxiety, Surviving the World, and Having More Fun.
I mean, I think just finishing a book in general is always something I never thought I would actually do, but just thought would be an amazing thing to accomplish. But I guess I wanted to make a project outside of music that could be like more useful to people and be have a bit more of like a utilitarian value to it, where people could like open it up and like, oh, here's some actual practical strategies for kind of getting out of your own head or feeling better. And it's mostly illustrations. So, you know, you can go through it quick. You don't have to like, it's not dense reading or anything. And I've always loved to draw anyway. And I love depression humor. I think it's like one of my my favorite genre. I don't know if you ever listened to like Bo Burnham or...
Oh, hell yes.
What a genius. Like he put out that latest special and he's got a song called Shit where it's just like this dance rock song about, fellas, do you feel like shit? Tell me, do you feel like shit? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And it's just like, it speaks to millions, you know? So I've always used humor to kind of power through the brain battles, you know? So
yeah.
I'm pretty pumped about the book, and I think I'm extra pumped because it was so hard to make. Like it was like 20 times harder than any album I've ever made. And
interesting.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't think I was going to finish it. My best friend in person and ex-wife Anna, she was the editor and really helped me kind of like put it over the edge and get it done. So yeah, man, it's fun to have a brick of pages just sitting there in hardcover on your desk. It feels neat.
Was this a pandemic project, something that really started to kind of come to fruition during the pandemic when you had the downtime?
Well, yeah, I mean, the pando definitely helped me finish it. But yeah, I've been working on it for 4 years almost. So there was no excuse to not finish the book. You know, if I was like, if I don't finish the book in the pando, I'm a failed man. I got to do it. This is it, you know, so
that's on you.
Yeah.
It was one of the reasons why you wanted to illustrate it as well, because you wanted it to be available to maybe children as well as adults, and it can speak to all people? Or was there a method behind the illustration madness versus book or testimonial, if you will?
Well, I think I just had so many drawings already, so it was like already on its way. And there was going to be more text and more writing and like explaining like how to work through certain situations. But we kind of like, I sat down with Anne and we're like, you know, it'll be more impactful if there's just less text, more drawings. And I mean, a lot of the jokes are like, I came up with like going back in time to like my middle school and high school brain, because there's so much like coming of age humor in there too. But there's also a ton of adult humor. So I would say like middle school is, if you're in middle school and like dodging bullies in the hallways, you'll probably get a lot of the jokes. If you're in high school, it'll hopefully connect. And I think mostly it's for adults, even though the drawings look like they could be for 5-year-olds. Yeah.
Okay. You said it. I didn't say it. No, I love the art. I love everything about it. And it certainly resonates with me. And when you talk about those middle school years, can you share an anecdote as it relates to the book? Yeah, you know, whether or not it's, you know, represented in the book or not, I'm just curious, because that's something I love, coming of age dark shit.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. You know, there were some cool moments in high school. I played basketball, and there was a lot of glory there. We had a really good team, and the gyms were packed. But outside of that, like socially, I think, you know, being a shy kind of weird kid and maybe an environment where the arts weren't really encouraged, or it's like I didn't want like a lot of these kids to see me drawing, because, you know, they would see that and be like, fucking pussy, or, you know, yep, whatever, like the goth kids, and like they would like punch me. Or one time I was just walking down the hallway minding my own business, and I heard, "Hey, look, it's a little kid." And this giant linebacker from the football team came like running at full speed and tackled me and smashed me into the locker, and like my books exploded everywhere. There's still a dent in the second floor lockers at Berlin West High School. But I mean, just crazy stuff. Like you'd get punched in the kidneys when you weren't looking. And
yeah,
that's probably why I can't drink much beer, because my kidneys are shot.
Your kidneys hurt from getting so many shots and punches. That's funny.
Yeah. And like there was bomb threats a few times. And I don't know. It wasn't like the worst high school. Like there was people that probably had way scarier high schools. But I mean, one guy was like called in like a school shooter threat. And like there was, you were always actually in danger of your physical health. And getting messed up. And I never got punched in the nose or anything, but I got choked out in the band room once and almost passed out. I thought I blacked out. I thought I was going to die. And that's not to mention, like, I mean, the emotional abuse can be much worse. Like when sit down at the lunch table and everyone at the table takes all the food off your plate, like getting teamed up on. It's like, I'm just a person, like I'm like not being a douche to people. I'm just trying to survive and like,
dude,
not let people
I would have been your
me.
Friend, dude. I want to go back in time and sit with you. That's so gnarly.
There was this one time, there's this lunch table of like the cool kids, like star football players. And there was only like 8 seats on the table, and from left to right, it worked as like a social totem pole. So the kids on the end, Jay and Chad, they were like the coolest kids and like the most jacked and tan and ripped and like most athletic. So they were like the kingpins. And as the table went down, it got to be more like the loserdom went up. So they let me sit on the very end of the table, which was nice of them because I didn't know where else to go. And this one time I went up to get a sandwich and this kid Sweeney came in and he took my seat. And I was like, oh no, like I got to do something. I'm standing here looking like an asshole in the middle of the lunchroom and people are looking at me. And I'm like, Sweeney, I want my seat back. And he's like, fuck you, Newski, you little bitch. And I took him and I tackled him off of the cafeteria table, and everyone started cheering. And like, he was bigger than me, so I thought he was going to pummel me into oblivion. So we tackled each other onto the concrete floor. I took the seat back. I thought for sure he was going to come up and smash me in the head with a steel pipe or something. But he just sat there and he started crying. And then I felt terrible. But then Jay and all the guys on the table were like, hey, good job sticking up for yourself. And then they upgraded me one slot towards
on the table. You get towards the cool side.
Oh. Yeah. And those guys were actually real nice to me. And that was cool of them. But yeah, you know, shit like that's funny now. But at the time, it was like, good Lord.
I was on the opposite side of the spectrum, where I was the big kid who was a target because people wanted to take me down because I was so big. And I had my Sweeneys. Mine was Brian Garrity. And that son of a bitch tortured me my freshman year of high school so bad that I actually shit my pants in school.
Oh,
like,
man.
Like I had to go through half a day after defecating myself just because I was so, the anxiety had taken over.
Yeah, man, that's real. That's heavy duty. I definitely whizzed my pants at school before, so you're not alone.
But now I can look back and we can laugh and celebrate it and also turn it into art like you've done with your book. And also tell me about the music.
There's 8 new songs that go along with the book. It's Hard to Be a Person. And those were songs I recorded in my friend Liv's basement in Milwaukee with my musical collaborator Spatola. And they were all like kind of coming of age songs of like, I found all these old lyrical scraps in my parents' basement a couple years ago when I was just going through old stuff of stuff that I'd written in high school. So I kind of used that as fire starter for a new batch of songs. So it's got kind of a Violent Femmes, a little power pop influence, like acoustic thrashy rock and roll, kind of short, quick songs to the point. But yeah, it's like social anxiety songs about trying to figure out your shit, you know? So yeah, it kind of fits in with the book. And
yeah, you've got some good names involved also.
On the album, Stephen Page from Bare Naked Ladies sings on the opening track called I Should Have Listened to Ferris Bueller. And he was like my first musical hero as a kid. So that was a big deal for me.
That title alone is amazing.
I really should have. I should have seen Ferris Bueller sooner, because like that is the code you need to live by, and especially in high school, you know.
Hell yes,
Bueller. Bueller.
I'll tell you, when I was in high school, if you told me that one day pot weed would be legalized, like you could walk into a shop like March and Ash and buy weed, I would never have believed you. I would have thought you were high. And we'll continue with our talk with Brett Newsky here momentarily. But first, do want to make you aware of March and Ash. If you are interested in cannabis-related products, could be non-psychoactive like the CBDs or the CBNs to help you sleep. I have a lot of friends, myself included. Hi, I'm your friend who use CBNs to help sleep. And then they also have the psychoactive products, the THC, that is. Everything you can imagine, marchandash.com for the in-store experience. Mission Valley, Vista, City Heights, Imperial, coming to Chula Vista and IB. But online, you can do the delivery and the curbside pickup. Someone just fired up their lawnmower. marchandash.com. All right. Let's get back to Brett Newsky here as we talk about his podcast, which I'm very interested in. I got to check it out, Dirt from the Road. Tell us about it, Brett.
Yeah, so the podcast, we just we were telling like funny, weird stuff that happened to us like offstage, you know, between shows. And I had to document some of this stuff because some of it like is so nuts. Like, I'm just thinking, you know, lighting our car on fire, like driving down a mountain in Norway on accident, or like one time in, like when I lived in Asia, like a guy like offered to sell me a grenade for $35, and just like stuff that I thought was like, oh, this, I guess this is normal for the territory at the time. And then like I would tell people about this and they'd be like, you got to write that shit down. So yeah, that's kind of the start of the pod, is like bizarre ass road stories, because you can't make some of this stuff up when you're like in transient mode and you're traveling and you like stay at like a abandoned rubber factory after a gig in Holland, and you know, there's like a guy who escaped from the high security prison next door, like walking around. So it all needs to be documented for posterity's sake, and it's a good time. We also talk about some mental health boosts and stuff. Like Carabo is really cool, and you know, kind of sharing how he like some of his tricks for like meditating while jogging and stuff like that. And the episode with Glenn Phillips of Toad the Wet Sprocket was really cool, because he really opened up and talked a lot about his anxiety. Yeah, he's a sweet dude, and he's really open about talking about his anxieties and stuff. And I thought that was really useful to people, and it was pretty heartwarming. So yeah, it's been neat to riff with some of these fellas.
How cool. I'll definitely dig into that. Dirt from the Road, the podcast, and then the new book, It's Hard to Be a Person. Thank you so much for joining us and helping destigmatize all the mental health weirdness.
Oh, man, this has been such a good time. Yeah, I feel like I've known you a long time. It's we're like best pals now.
Yeah. If you're ever down in the area and want to do one of these pop-up shows, please let me know and we'll get something together. And I'll carry the anticipation anxiety for the both of us.
Hopefully it'll be a low pressure show for you, Chris. But yeah, I love San Diego. Can't wait to get back there. So we'll have to swap emails or something. And
yeah, absolutely. All the best.
All right, my man.
All right, that does it. Big thanks to Brett. I think I've made a new friend. In fact, after we did the interview, we were talking back and forth via email. And the next time he is here in San Diego, we are going to sync up. And maybe we'll have him perform at one of our Sundown sessions. And if you haven't been to a Sundown session, we've got another show happening with reggae legend Pato Bantan Friday, August 13th, out at the Tower Beach Club. And you can get your tickets at sundownsessionslive.com. And I do thank you for listening. Also want to let you know that if you haven't subscribed to the show, now would be a really good time to do so. We're up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts or Google Play. Because in the next month or so, let's call it August, we're going to be releasing more content on a more regular basis. So, yeah, Really looking forward to that. Until then, be kind to yourself and others and live life with compassion and understanding and all that good stuff. All right. Take care.